I interviewed David about 5 or 6 years ago in the People's Republic of Southport, where I live. But David lives in the People's Republic of Stockport, which is south of Manchester. Okay, great. Now, David, just tell us a little bit about what you do at the moment, because you're involved as a Christian work, and you live in Stockport. And how does your day pan out? What have you been doing today, for example?
Well, actually, today I was teaching down in Wales in a school of evangelism.
Were you teaching rugby?
No.
Okay.
I was teaching the Bible, how to walk in the Spirit.
Okay. So you've been in Wales?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're a Christian minister now?
I am a pastor. I actually have two churches.
But right.
I just oversee the second one, but I lead the other one.
Okay. Now, you grew up in Northern Ireland. Which part? What was it like?
I grew up in Belfast. That's where I knew some of them answers. By the way, your pronunciation is atrocious. But at least he got my name right. I was happy about that. No, I grew up in Belfast, and I was only a teenager when my life was affected by the Troubles. Just a group of guys beat me up walking home from school, threw me into the river. And when I was climbing out, I honestly didn't know why they had attacked me. And so I was looking at them, and one of them says, "Do you not know why we did that?" I says, "No, don't. And here is, I'll tell you why. You are a Protestant, and we are Roman Catholics. And Protestant and Catholics fight with each other." And as they walked away laughing, I was standing there dripping. And I said to myself, "That's it. I will not have a Roman Catholic friend ever again."
What age were you, David?
15.
Okay, and you were in pain, or were you just dripping wet? Or did you dive in the river to get out of the way?
A few punches I have worse than that done to me. So there wasn't really any pain to it at all. It was just the shock of why they did it. I just couldn't comprehend. They just walked up to me, and as they got up to me, I recognized some of them. But one of them said to the others, "I think we should beat David Hamilton up, throw him in the river." And that's bad, because I'm David Hamilton.
The Radio 2 DJ?
No.
Oh, no.
Definitely not.
That was your different life. Okay. David, tell us about, have you any brothers or sisters?
I do have three sisters and a brother.
And are they younger or older than you?
I was the middle one. So I have two sisters older and then two younger.
Okay. Did you leave school, or were you sort of encouraged to leave school?
Well, I'll tell you this. When I left school, I asked the headmaster, and he asked me what school I went to. So I knew it wasn't going to be a good... I got 5 O-levels, O for this and O for that. But that was it, really.
So you left at 16?
I did, yes.
Okay. And, David, did you go into a regular job, or were you out of work, or what did you do when you were 16 originally?
Well, when I left work, I actually got a job as a trainee draftsman.
Okay.
Working in a factory, in a steel factory that did steel erection.
Right.
So I was working, it was actually a white-collar job, you know, but the judge said I was living a double life because I was wearing a suit to work, and then at night I was running about involved in terrorist activities.
David, I was talking to a friend of mine, Billy McCurry, who was, in fact, he ended up in the maze with you, and I asked him how he got involved in terrorist activity in the first place, and he was explaining to me that sometimes in the pubs, the guys would encourage young men to join at that level, etc. So how was it for you when you... Because you got wrapped up in this quite big style, didn't you? So
no, well, what happened was because of getting that beating, I joined a skinhead gang, which was called the Rathcoole Cae. Rathcoole is the area where I come from. In Belfast, it was a large housing estate of about 30,000. And the word Cae, K-A-I, I had it tattooed on my arm here, but I've been getting it lasered off. But the letters K-A-I mean kill all Irishmen. So that's what the gang was called, because we were Ulster men. We were Protestants, and British. Mm. I didn't like anyone to call me an Irishman.
Okay.
Sometimes I'd hit them with a hammer just to help them remember that I was not an Irishman. I was a Protestant. Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. And I said, I am British.
You, even as a 16-year-old, you seem to have quite a lot of animosity in there. Did that sort of grow and develop, or what sort of things did you get up to with this gang at night?
Well, we were fighting, obviously, with Roman Catholic gangs. But somebody then said, you know, if we burn all of the Roman Catholics out, Rathcoole will become all Protestant. And I thought that makes sense, you know, it would make it a safer area. So I siphoned petrol out, and that was probably my first act of terrorism.
And this was to throw at the houses?
I just threw it, smashed the windows and threw it into the house and torched them.
And you just run off or jump in a car and fly off?
No, there's no cars or anything, just run about the streets doing that.
And then during the day you go to work?
That's right.
Did you ever feel bad about this, David?
No. I thought there's sense in it. If it becomes all Protestant, you'll not have to worry about IRA having meetings in the area where you live or anything. So I just thought, and that was happening all over the province, by the way, not just in Belfast, but all over. Protestants were being burned out of their homes and Catholics were being burned. And so areas became all Protestant and all Catholic. Most of these were working class estates now, not other parts of Belfast, of course. People mixed, you know, Protestant and Catholic, but in the working class areas, they became predominantly all Protestant or Catholic.
Mm. Now, 1969 was a big year for Northern Ireland Troubles. So what age were you? What year was that, David?
Well, I was only 12 or 13 at that time. So I was 13. I didn't understand that. I didn't know what it was over. I'd just seen rioting on the television. But 2 years later, when them guys beat me up and told me it was because I was a Protestant, then I decided that's the reason why I'll not be. Hmm. And I want to be. I'm a Protestant, so I am British. And I just thought that's... I hadn't at that stage really decided to join the terrorist group. How that happened, as you asked that question earlier, I was in a youth club on a Friday night and this man came in and just walked over and opened the fire exit door, and these other men walked in the set combat uniform, army garb on the table tennis table. And he said, we are starting a Protestant paramilitary group to fight the IRA. I want to join all the gang members to join up. And so a lot of my friends just put their hands up and I joined with them as well.
And when you joined, was there a joining fee?
No. Not
you
at
just,
all.
You had to just wear the uniform.
Yeah, well, obviously, they started to put in this sort of army structure that, you know, you had to do marching, and there was eventually, after 3 months, I think, if they thought that you would stay. For some guys left, but the majority stayed in it. Hmm. And then they started to give us weapon training, and it became more disciplined.
Did you get the impression that this was a sort of secret organisation, or were they quite public about it?
No, it was not. At that time, it was called the Ulster Defence Association. So they built areas, you know, with barricades, with cars and buses and things, and people walked about with an army uniform on. But sometimes they were masked, obviously, if the police or army were taking photographs, but it was a public organisation, and it was not, at that time, classed as an illegal group or anything.
And how many sort of days a week or nights a week, Debbie, would you be involved in this? Would it just be a couple of times a month, or would it
be... Oh, no. It became part of your everyday life because there was rioting every day. There was bombing. Bombs going off every day. So all of this, with the start of that campaign, you know, it was constant. So every single day... There was
and
something happened.
Did your parents know you were involved, or your sisters?
Only,
and...
Yes, after a couple of months, I was made a corporal, and I was allowed to take a gun home. And so I hid the gun in my bedroom. I thought it was well hid, you know. Sometimes I couldn't even find it. But my mother found it. Mothers find everything, you know. But I heard my mother screaming, and I ran up the stairs, and sure enough, she was holding the gun like this. Who does this belong to? Who owns this? So I says, it's not mine, it must be hers. So I pointed at my sister. She was 7 at the time. So she was shaking her head. And then when my dad came home from work, my mum says, that boy has a gun upstairs, you need to talk to him. And my dad just called me into the dining room, closed the door, and as soon as I turned around, he just grabbed me by the throat up against the wall. My dad had been a professional boxer. So you know what that means, don't you? He was just holding me by the tonsils. He says, are you listening to me? If you bring a gun back into this house, you'll be wearing your teeth as a necklace. Do you understand me? That's Irish for yes, I do. I knew he was serious, you know, so I never brought a gun ever back into the house.
But they were then aware that you got involved in this particular
they
group.
Knew, of course. I just go around the back and pull the dog out of the kennel, put the gun in, shove the dog back in again. I told the police he was a gun dog. They wouldn't even laugh at that, you know. There's no humour in them boys. But they did know then, obviously, I was connected in some way. And then I was arrested a couple of months later for armed robbery and went into prison.
You spent how long in prison, David?
Altogether, 10 years.
So that would have been, let's say, your first offence?
It was,
where
yes.
I only did
a year at that time. And then I got released and then I was put on probation. But I was arrested again for suspected armed robberies and put back in jail again.
Where did you spend your first stint?
It was, the prison was called Longcash. It was an old RAF base outside Lisburn. And so they converted it into... But at that time, they had political status, so it was very much a political training camp. Actually, in prison at that time, we had bomb-making classes and weapon training with real explosives on real guns. People think, how could that be? But if you check this, you can verify it, because there's been guys shot dead in prison by other prisoners. There's been people blown up in prison by other groups that have planted booby trap bombs and that. So I actually learned how to make booby trap bombs, and I learned how to strip. I liked, you could pick a weapon or a gun that you wanted to major on, and I actually liked the hand grenade. I just liked the feel of it. I liked it that much, I even tattooed it on my leg with a needle and thread. That's, you know, you have to do something to pass the time. So I just sat like this with my leg up and sticking the needle into myself. Took me 3 days to tattoo that. But that was actually called a 36mm hand grenade. When it exploded, it broke up into 36 different parts. But I learned I could take it apart, take out the detonator, and put it back together again, even in the dark. And guys would do that with guns, that they could learn to take it apart and put it together again. And you just practice like that, and then you learned the art of planting bombs, how to make a booby trap bomb that somebody else would set it off.
When you went to Longcash for your year stint, did you sort of go in there thinking, I'm not sure I'm going to like prison experience, or did you sort of go in there feeling, this is a proud thing because I'm achieving something?
No. I don't even think I'd ever entered my head. It's just that the thing was, I was arrested. So when I was put in jail, and to be quite honest, my first night in jail was a very bad experience. I turned 18 in prison, so I was 16 or 17. But my first night in jail, they put me in the cell with a man, and in the middle of the night, he tried to have sex with me. And I woke up, and this man was standing over the top of my bed, and I had to fight him off. But I also was doing amateur boxing at that time, so I was able to defend myself. But that scared me. At that time, I was a skinny wee runt. You know, there was more beef in an oxo cube than there was me. But this man thought he could have his way with me, but only that it was a street fighter as well. So I gave him a bad beating. Well, a severe beating.
After your 1 year in there, you came out. What happened next?
I went straight back into the organisation. And I just got more involved and I started to do armed robberies and things.
Did you manage to land a job in terms of getting some pay?
Listen, what do you hear this? I was in jail for a year, right? Do you see the morning I got out of prison? My dad says, you needn't think you're coming home to sit in the house. You're going back to work. And he put me in the car. Before he took me home, I've never told anybody this, but saying you've asked it, he drove me up to the place where I used to work and says, can this boy have a job again? And the manager liked me. But this is the truth. This is just the way it happened. The other draftsmen didn't want me back in.
Did they know about you?
Oh, of course. It was the talk of the factory. David's been arrested and questioned about terrorist activity, so they knew I went to jail. And they just didn't like the idea of me working back in the same job. But the boss said to me, you know, I like you, you're a good worker and that. And he says, do you want to stay on? But I'll put you down on the shop floor. You can learn a trade or something. And because I had the skills of drawing, I was able to mark out steel on the floor. And so I did serve my time then as a welder. You know, so I have a Boilermaker's card for welding, and I did steel erecting then for the
so
next 4 years.
Did your dad bring you home after the interview?
He did. I have to tell you this. This is funny. I would rob banks and then go and put security grills up on the same bank that I robbed. That is hard to believe, but it's true. And it just happened that I robbed the bank, and I was in the bank for an hour when we were robbing it. And the very next day, I went to work, and the boss said to me, get a pen and paper and bring a tape measure. We're going to measure up a job. So I never thought. I just jumped in the car. We're driving through Belfast, and I thought, this is the route I took yesterday to rob the bank. And then I stopped. I got the shock of my life. He parked outside the bank. This bank was robbed.
And he said no.
He says, we're going to make security grills. And I was sliding down the street like this. Here's me, I can't go in there. Come on, move, drive off. And here's, what's wrong? And here's me, I'm not going in there. And here's, it was you, wasn't it? And I never said nothing. But the next day, I took a bomb into work and set it on one of the lorries. And somebody came running in and said, there's a bomb in one of the lorries outside. And he looked over at me and I says, I could defuse it. Because he didn't know I'd said it there. But I just says, but don't you be telling anybody what you know about me. And he just looked at me and I went over and pulled the detonator out. But I did it because I knew he could inform on me, have me arrested.
So this was to intimidate him?
I've never told this story before. I'm amazed that I've told you this. But anyway, that's just what happened. I just did it to intimidate him. That was all.
David, did you have any Christian input in your life at all in terms of did you get dragged along to a church when you were a child, or was your grandma a Christian?
No, there was nobody in my family Christian at all. But when we first moved to Belfast, we went to church, myself and my two sisters. And I actually still have a hymn book that they gave me when I was 8 years old for church attendance or Sunday school. But they only went for about 2 years, and then my mum and dad weren't interested in church, so we weren't forced to go. I think they just let us go to get us out of the house, give them an hour's peace or so on a Sunday. But there was nothing religious at all.
You've moved a very long way, and we'll come to the detail in a minute, but if you've got absolutely no Christian input in your life, And therefore, you know, you've gone into these gangs and got mixed up with the worst of people, really. Something must have changed you, David. What age were you when your life was totally changed?
What age? When I got converted, I think I was 23 or 24.
But you got to a situation where you got real serious crime, because I think you remember you telling me you were in a restaurant one night and...
Oh, yes.
You were sprung attacked.
I did. I came out of prison that second time, and because I had all this training, I decided I wanted to fight the IRA, where the other group was more defensive, and so I joined the Ulster Volunteer Force, and they were the most feared group at that time. They would attack IRA targets, and I wanted to do that, so I joined them. And over the next 18 months then, I was heavily involved in everything that you can imagine. When I was arrested, I was questioned about murder, bank robberies, bombings, hijackings, stealing weapons, all of those things.
When they were planning these sort of attacks and you were involved, what was going through your head in terms of if we get caught or somebody grasses on us and it doesn't work, have we got plan B worked out? Did you think like that?
That's actually what happened. One of my men was caught and he made a deal and they gave him £20,000 and let him go free. And he named everybody else in our squad. So we all were arrested midnight, you know, in the early hours of the morning. The army and the police raided our houses. So we were all arrested like that. But when I was doing these things, you just plan what you think is the best escape route. But, you know, obviously there's a chance that you can be caught. And there was times where the police did chase me after some events, but I was able to escape on a getaway car or something.
Were you ever frightened, David, during these attacks or this time? You sound quite fearless, but I'm sure there's a human being there.
No, well... That's not true. I was planting a bomb once and the army came and the soldier jumped out and there was a proxy bomb underneath the motorway bridge just to disrupt the whole thing during the loyalist strike. But this part-time soldier jumped out of the car and I seen him getting out of the car, so I started to run up the embankment to get away. But he pulled out a gun and he shouted, "Halt or I'll shoot." And he fired shots at me, but I felt the bullets going around me. And that scared me, like, you know. So there was times where you'd be nervous, I guess, you know. But then if you were doing something and there was a bit of danger, you did have an adrenaline rush, you know.
You were in Loncash and then you did a second stint.
I went back into the Mays prison then. That was the H blocks.
That was the time of the hunger strike
in the prison, and Bobby Sands led the hunger strike. He was one of my friends growing up when we were boys on the housing estate where we lived. So it was strange seeing him lead the IRA hunger strike, and yet he and I were buddies when we were 10 or 11 years old playing football together. And then here I am. And it must be being Irish, it takes it a lot longer to reach the brain. But I just heard this name, Bobby Sands is leading the hunger strike. But I never connected it with the guy who was my friend until I seen his picture on television. I thought, what? That's Sandsy. And I thought, I know him. And I thought, I wish I could get him, I'd shoot him. But that was just the way it was then. From being friends, we actually became enemies.
When you were in prison, did you ever talk with prison chaplains or was there any Christian input there?
No, there was prison chaplains, but I'll tell you this, I went to church one time and I was sitting in church and I just thought I'll have a smoke, and I lit a cigarette in the chapel, like, and the minister stopped the meeting and says, "What do you think you're doing?" And I just didn't care.
And so he
told two officers to take me out, and they marched me out. But I just was doing it to show off, you know what I mean? It was a silly thing to do. It was more of a prank. But
Where were you, David, when it dawned on you that God loved you and Christ died for you?
Actually, what happened was I walked into my cell one night. I'd been in jail about 2.5 years. And when I walked in, there was a bit of paper lying on the bed. So I picked it up and looked at it, and it said, "Jesus Christ is coming back soon." So I laughed. And I had a cellmate. I should tell you this first. Everybody in jail has a nickname, you know. So because I went brown in the summer, they all said I'd look like a Pakistani. So my nickname is Paki. But that's okay, because Paki is Irish for Patrick. So they all think that's my name, Patrick. But my cellmate, he had a nickname too. His name was Bungalow.
Bungalow.
He had no upstairs, you see. That is true. It was his name, Bungalow.
Bungalow.
So I said to Bungalow, "You're listening. Jesus Christ is coming back soon to a cinema near you." And he just laughed. And I says, "Will we go to the pictures and watch, you know?" And he just laughed as well, because none of us was interested. But I just rolled this track up and threw it out the window. And I was sitting on the bed, right? And I was drinking my tea. And this is only about 15 minutes later. And it was as suddenly as that, you know. This thought came into my head. David, it's time to change, become a Christian. And I thought, what? Where did that come from? I know now, looking back, of course, it was the Spirit of God speaking to my own spirit. But I, at that time, I just thought, where did that come from? And then I thought Bungalows put dope in my tea. Because sometimes if you leave your cup there and they'll drop tabs, and then you drink and you're on the bed like a muppet. So I said to Bungalow, "What did you put in my tea?" And here is Marvel. You see, you always had a laugh. You know, you have to have a laugh. And some of you young ones do not know what Marvel is. It's powdered milk. But anyway, I just thought, become a Christian, that's nuts. Prison is bad, but church is worse. I went to church as a child, you know. You got your face washed with Dawes, and then your hair combed, and this lady played the piano. Well, she tried to play the piano. It was like Sesame Street, you know. I thought, she is nuts. And then after we sang the first hymn, this man came out from behind a big purple curtain, and he was dressed up like Batman. Big long robes and all on, with a big blue collar. I thought, imagine running about like that. He must have a Batmobile outside. No. But he was the man. And that even these bouncers, they called them elders. But these guys all stood at the door. When you come in, they says, "Nice to see you." And then when you were sitting, they came around with the bag, "Give us your money." They didn't even wear masks or nothing. And Batman never tried to stop him. I thought, oh, this is a terrible... So that was my image of church. And I thought, I used to sit in church like this. Thank you, God. I'm not a Christian. And I don't want to be a Christian. There's more life on a pencil battery than there is these Christians. So I don't want to be one. But here's the thing. I did, honestly. Do you know why? I've always believed in God. Since I was a child, I'd never doubted the reality of God. I think people's nuts who say there is no God. You know, there's proof all around us that there's a God. You know, if you look at a painting, you don't say, "That just happened." You know automatically someone's painted that. Isn't that right? You don't look at a building and say, I laugh when people say about the Big Bang Theory. I said, "Do you ever see a Big Bang?" I've seen bombs go off, big bangs, but all the bricks and dust don't fall down into a nice bungalow or a nice wall or something. It's chaotic. It's rubble. And you don't see wee babies coming out of the dust, just formed. It's nuts to think that life comes out of it. So I never believed that at any stage. I thought there's a God. But having said that too, honestly, when I joined the paramilitaries, the first time they gave me a gun, I stood looking at myself in the mirror and I thought, what are you going to do if they ask you to shoot someone? And I was having this gun stuck down my jeans, and then I thought, I'm going to do it. Whatever they ask me to do, I'll do it. And you know what my next thought was, Vinnie? This is true. Then you're going to hell. And I, you know what I said to myself? Well, if I'm going to hell, it doesn't matter what I do then. After that, there's no way back. And that was my thought, honestly.
You threw this Christian booklet through the window and had a word with Bungalow. But that must have got to you over the months. So what happened to bring you...
You're wrong. It got to me all right. 15 minutes later, I'm sitting there and I just finished my cup of tea and I walked over to set my cup up and there was a Gideon Bible. There's this other terrorist group called the Gideons. They terrorize the devil and everybody else who gets in the way. They ambush children coming out of school with red Bibles and all. If you leave your sunroof open, you'll come back, find your car full of these wee red books. But they put them in the cells, and everybody in jail likes the Bible. Because if you have no cigarette papers, you just rip a page from the Bible. I smoked Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I was a real holy smoker. But you know what? I walked over and set the cup up, and I lifted the Bible. And I just flicked it open, and it was the old King James. Right? It says, "Whence comest thou hither?" I says, "Hither who? What's that supposed to be?" I did. I was laughing. I thought, look at that. You couldn't read that. So I closed it, set it up on the shelf, walked over to my bed, looked over again. 2 minutes later, walked back over, picked up the Bible again. And I just flicked it open and I looked at it and it didn't make no sense to me. So I closed it, set it up on the shelf, walked back over to my bed. 2 minutes later, I walked over again and I lifted the Bible, but this time Bungalow said, "I'm getting dizzy." "What are you doing walking up and down with the Bible?" And I said to him, "You know, I'm thinking about being a Christian." And I tell you, he just gave a big laugh and he was lying on top of the bed like a dead chicken. Had his legs up in the air holding a say, "You a Christian, go to sleep. You'll be okay tomorrow. You'll be normal." And then he says, "You couldn't be a Christian." And I says, "Why not?" He says, "You're evil." And you know what? That even struck me, you know, because it did. That pierced my heart too. Because, you know, to realize people compare themselves with other people. You know what I said? "I'm not as bad as him. He's worse than me." And I thought about other people. But you see, the Bible compares you with the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the difference. The sinless, spotless Son of God. But at that time, I just laughed and put the Bible up and thought, "Man, this is mad. Why am I doing this then?" And I thought, "Oh, you're starting to crack or something." But you know what? I was sitting on the bed and the same thing happened again. David, it's God that has kept you alive. And I thought, it's God that kept me alive. And honestly, I had never ever sat down and the things that happened to me and thought, "Oh, that was God." I always just said I was lucky. You know, I'll tell you a few occasions, can I? Just for people trying to...
Tell us the one in the restaurant where they ran through the wrong door.
I had been arrested by the police and interrogated about a murder. I got released. I was sitting in a restaurant looking at the menu and the door opened, just kicked open, and I looked up and there was two gunmen. IRA men. One of them was the brother of the dead IRA man that I was accused of killing. And I just looked at them like that, and they pulled out two handguns. And it says, "No one move." And then he just said to me, "Packy, you're coming with us." Well, I knew what he meant by that. If I went with them, they were going to skin me. They would cut my tattoos off. Because they're all covered over now, but these were all political. UVF or Gordon Ulster and all just Ulster flags and everything. And honestly, they killed one of my friends and they cut his tattoos off before they shot him dead. And I thought, they'll torture me. And I thought, I'm not going with them. They can kill me here. And you know what? There was a fire exit door. And I said to myself, run for the door. You have a chance. And it was just like this. I jumped up and I ran for the door. But when I reached the door, I went like this to bang it open. But you know, instead, I stopped and I stopped up against it like this. And I turned and I ran up the room. And the first guy turned and fired two rounds at me. The second guy didn't fire because there's a good chance he had to hit the guy with them. So only the first one fired. But I ran through the kitchen doors then and was able to get out and get away. But when the police came to interview me, the policeman said, the other people told us that you ran for the fire exit door and you stopped. Is that true? And here's me, yes. And then here he is, how did you know? And I says, know what? He says, how did you know not to go through the fire door? And I says, why? Here he is, there was three gunmen. And one of them had walked around the building and was standing outside the fire exit door. And he says to me, how did you know to stop? And I just says, I'm too smart for them boys. But you see, when I was on my own, I said to myself, why did I stop? And you see, that night sitting in jail, I'm sitting on my bed thinking, that was God. That must have been God. I says, that must have been God did that. I'm getting emotional because you relive it. But another time I put a bomb in a building, blew myself up as well. The bomb went off prematurely and I woke up lying on the ground. The place was on fire, and when I got up, I shook my head and glass fell out. And I looked and my clothes were cut to shreds. And I thought, I'll be cut to pieces. And when I went outside, I looked and there was nothing on me, not a scratch. And I'm sitting in jail thinking, was that God? That must have been God too did that. And then a guy tried to kill me. He came up and I seen him looking at me and I turned to look at him. And sure enough, he pulled out a gun. But the strange thing was he came right over to me and he pushed the gun up to my head. So I grabbed his arm like this, pulled it down. But he shot me in the foot three times. And then I fell on the ground and he leaned over, put the gun to my head, and he pulled the trigger, and the gun jammed. And he ran off cursing, and they took me to the hospital then, and took two bullets out of me. That night in jail, I sat there, and I says, why would God do that if he only loves good people? Why would God spare my life? That doesn't make sense. And then, you know what happened? I walked over again and I picked up the Bible. But I didn't open it this time. I only opened the fly leaf. Them Gideons aren't stupid, you know. They put scriptures on the fly leaf. And I looked down and it says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. But I read it and here's me, for God so loved the world. Yes, because he made the world. And I says, that's why he loves it. And then it says, whosoever believes in him. So then it says, no, it's talking about people. Whosoever believes in him shall not perish. And you know what my next thought was? That's not true. That's a lie. You know what I said? I believe in God, but I'm going to perish. I says, God will not forgive me. And I looked at that and I says, that's not true. Whoever believes in God shall have everlasting life. And I closed the Bible and set it up. And I was sitting on the bed and I thought, well, why would God let me live? There must be a reason for that. And here's, you know what I believe was the biggest miracle of all? Do you know what happened in that instant? I'm sitting on the bed and I said, I want God to change me. I had never, ever thought like that in my life. And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't want to live like this no more. Oh, God, will you save me? And I wanted to. And that's why I say to people, do you see, if you're not a Christian, relax. Because I won't make you a Christian and have news for you. Neither will Vinny. And neither will God. The Bible says it's a gift of God that you must receive. But I'm telling you this, do you see that night sitting on the bed? I wanted it. I wanted God to change my life. And it says, God, why did you keep me alive then? I want you to take away all this violence in me and the hatred and all. God, you've got to change me because I can't live like this. And you know what? When Bungalow fell asleep, I says, I'm going to pray. And I did. I actually knelt down to pray, and I just asked the Lord Jesus Christ to come into my life. And I says, God, I will live for you if you change my life. That's all I prayed. And the next morning, when we woke up, usually you reach for your tobacco tin, and Bungalow looked at me and here's, why are you smiling? I says, I am a Christian now. He was so happy for me. He ran out the door, hallelujah. Packy's joined the God squad. He's a sky pilot. And I'm going, oh no, I have to walk out of this. And that was the start of the banter. Like, I came out, and the first guy I actually seen was my future brother-in-law. And here he is to me, is this true? Are you a Christian now? I says, I am. He says, that's good. Change that custard cream into fish and chips for me. You know? So everybody laughed at that, you see. And then here he is. Tonight, Paggy will perform a miracle. He says he's going to walk across the bathwater. So everybody was shouting and giggling, you know. But that's the banter that you get in jail. And
how long were you in there for?
Five and a half years.
Now, David, if you are in terrorist activity and you are in one particular group, UDF, UVF, and then you become a Christian and you don't want to kill anymore, then the opposition, well, you're no good to that group, but you haven't joined the opposition. So you're a bit in no man's land.
Well, it's funny
because... So what happened to you then?
Well, the UVF, the thing is, you swear an oath when you join it. You can't leave. One of my men became a Christian and tried to leave, and he was shot dead 2 weeks later. And that was the way it was, so... I was arrested for that murder too. But anyway... That's why I says there's no way God will forgive me, because I was involved in this guy's death. And then here's me becoming a Christian. So I just thought, they'll shoot me as soon as I get out. I just thought, most likely when I get out of jail here, they'll shoot me dead as well. And
so how did you manage to leave them?
I got out of prison, as I told you, 5.5 years later, and I was home 6 days and they sent for me. And I had to go into a bar.
So you were sort of expecting a call?
Well, what I tell you, if I knew that they killed one of my own men, there was more. I was a commander, he wasn't. So I knew more than actually what he did. I knew where weapons and things were stored. But at this time, everything's all different. But the thing was, anyway, I was a commander, and they don't let commanders go, like, no way. And so I got my brother to drive me to the bar, and he said, if you're not out in an hour, I'm ringing the police. And I says, you will not. I says, listen, if I don't come out, just go you on home. And I says, you wait 3 hours, and then you can ring if you want. I says, but do not, under no circumstances, come near the pub. You know? And when I went over, I walked in, and the guy just said to me, do you want a pint? And here's me, no, sure, don't drink now, I'm a Christian. Here's, well, it's good to see you, mate. Listen, are you coming back in to the ranks? Here's me, sure, you know I'm not. I'm a Christian. I've been a Christian 6 years. Here's, but listen, it's not as easy as that. You swore an oath when you joined, didn't you? And here's me, I know, but listen. If you shoot me, I says, I'm going to heaven. But I am not joining back up again. And here's, oh, going to heaven, are you? Here, you may go sooner than you think. That's just what he said to me. And here he is. Put him in the storeroom there. So I just looked over and walked over, and they put me in a room. It was just where they kept beer crates and things. And I was standing there looking up at the paint coming off the wall, and I could hear them talking, or mumbling anyway. But they're just saying, well, are we going to kill him? And some guys were trying to defend me. Another guy says, no, he has to go. Guys were saying, he's done 10 years. He's just out of jail a week, and you're going to shoot him dead. What does that say to his men in jail? Here's what you get for serving queen and country. And so they were debating it. And I'm standing there thinking, this is it, like. And I did, I said to myself, I bet you it'll be such and such will kill me. Because I thought he's killed about 13 people. So he's a psychopath. And he could kill me and lift his beer. Just as cool as that, that's the truth. Only a few men can kill like that. But he was one of them. And next thing, the door opened and the guy nodded like that. And I walked outside. And I just stood there looking at them. And the man that I thought would kill me walked over to me and he says, they can't make up their mind, he says. He says, I'm going to let you go. But if we have to come for you, we will. And I says, right, okay, whatever. And I did. I walked out the door. And I was frightened, you know, but the IRA, there was four attempts after that to kill me, after I became a Christian. The IRA bombed my church. Another time, they came to a church and they shot the three men dead at the door. Just shot each of them in the head and come in. They didn't know what I looked like, so they shot everybody in the church, shot eight other people. But they survived, but the three men at the door were all dead. You know, and then they came to my house. But I survived that too.
When did, David, when did all this peter out? Because they kept missing.
They did, but, you know, I know I'm emotional now thinking about it, but the truth was, at the time, I honestly had no fear. I didn't.
Because now you were sure of heaven.
I just said to myself, I am not stopping preaching. The reason why I became a target, I should say this, was because I started to go back into schools and with another guy who'd been an IRA terrorist, and he became a Christian. So we were talking about peace and reconciliation. And so some of you may remember that shooting in Darkley it was. But when they interviewed Dominic McGlinchey 10 years later, he himself said, I don't know what went wrong there that they ended up shooting everybody. He says, I give the guy instructions to shoot the UVF man. So he was admitting that they'd come to kill me, you know. But I just knew God's hand was on me, and I thought, I'm not letting that stop me.
So a guy from the other side became a Christian, and yourself, mm-hmm. and then you were very public in terms of schools.
We were, yes. We went into schools, colleges, and did interviews. We were invited over to London to the House of Commons and all to speak to all these politicians, you know. The police said that we were a high security alert because they knew then the IRA.
David, what did your family think about this? I mean, they'd seen this man transformed. Your sisters, perhaps your parents. Did they ever speak to you about things?
Aye, of course. You know, when I came home, my mother got saved. She was the first. Then my sisters and my family's all saved now. In fact, my brother's a Presbyterian minister, so pray for him. But it's true, my family are all saved. My father died there 2 years ago, but he got converted too before he died. So I've seen all of our family.
Did you leave Northern Ireland, come to Britain or England to distance yourself? Or is it safe for you to go back to Northern Ireland?
It is. I was over there last week. But the thing was, at the time that I moved, I've lived now in England 16 years, because my daughter's 16, so I've been away 16 years. And that was because the last time that they tried to kill me back home, that they came to my house and my wife lost a baby.
Right.
She was pregnant. And so she took a nervous breakdown after that, and the doctor said to me, it'd be better if you moved away.
What age were you, David, when you married?
When I got married? These are hard questions. I married her after I came out of jail, so I came out of jail at 28.
Do you think she sort of understood what she was taking on?
She did, because she was my next-door neighbour when she was 15. She visited me when I went into jail at 17. So she knew everything. She's really blessed to have me.
Yes, I'm sure. David, it's a fascinating story. I could go on and on, but I'm just conscious that we may run out of tape here. But we're going to have a few minutes break now for a cup of tea and some refreshments. And then we'll resume again. But at the very end, if people want to have a little chat to you, are you happy to chat?
Yeah, if you want, I'll take questions. If you want to do 5 minutes questions.
Well, we'll perhaps do that in the next bit.
Oh, well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, that'd
I
be absolutely...
I want
my tea. Dave, that'd be absolutely great. But it's... I just think of the millions of pounds taxpayers in our country are paying to change people like you. And it doesn't work. And a penniless carpenter from Nazareth can do it. And he never used a gun. It's incredible, isn't it?
Only, that's it. Somebody was responsible for that Bible being placed in that cell. They believed that God could make a difference.
Okay, great. We'll have a break. Thanks very much.